We've got a few case studies of HSDD, women who were willing to share their stories with us. The first is Lillian from Andover, Massachusetts. She told us about the problem she had getting the diagnosis and finding a doctor who could treat her HSDD.
My husband and I love to be together. We love to go for rides in our car together. We're partners in everything we do. It's being in each other's company that's the most important thing for us. Prior to giving birth, I think we had a normal sex life, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5 times a week. I knew after I gave birth to my first daughter that something had changed. I felt like something broke. You know, this switch went off. The first thing was no interest in sex. Not even thinking about it. It didn't exist anymore. It was almost like being a child and not having those thoughts. So when my husband would approach me for sex, it was a total shock because it wasn't my reality. And then when we did have sex, I had problems with arousal. The doctor, he said to me, well, it will come back, just give it time. Things will return to normal. And a year later, I went back to her and I said, I'm still having problems. Over and over again, I heard the same thing from every doctor I went to. And I went to internists, I went to gynecologists. I spoke to friends, I spoke to people I knew that were in the medical field. I did everything I could possibly do to find a solution. Over about a period of 27 to 28 years, I saw at least 10 physicians. Every time I went, I would sit in the waiting room worried about whether I should bring it up, because lots of times when I brought up the topic, it was not well received. I had several doctors roll their eyes. I had doctors who turn away and refuse to make eye contact with me. I felt uncomfortable and embarrassed speaking to physicians because many of them felt uncomfortable and embarrassed by my question. None of my doctors ever asked me about my sex life.
Hello, how are you? I'm Dr. Goldstein.
Lillian, on her first visit, was a woman who was angry, at the same time humiliated, at the same time frustrated, at the same time almost giving up.
Dr. Goldstein made me feel so comfortable. He listened to me. He didn't interrupt me. He encouraged me to provide him with as much information as possible. And he asked probing questions that would make me think about other things that perhaps I hadn't even thought about in regards to my sexual health.
Did you always have low desire?
So we're sort of the end of the road for many people. This is why it's very, very important for us to really listen and understand and provide the most care we can.
He wasn't uncomfortable asking me these questions, so he made me comfortable answering them.
I would encourage primary care doctors and gynecologists to make a sexual inquiry in all women at all times, at some part of the evaluation.
He focused in on the 4 areas of desire, arousal, orgasm, and pain, and we went through each one of those areas, and he asked me about where I was in each one of those areas.
Lillian's journey was long because doctors didn't take the initiative, really, to say, okay, I really believe you have no interest. Let me go on the internet. Let me read a book. Let me find out. A lot of doctors get a little hesitant because it opens up Pandora's box. It's like this deep, dark hole. Why did I do that? I only have really 7 minutes. So the medicine you're going to put on. It was awesome to be able to see her, work with her, and get her to a state of marked sexual function improvement. Lil told me when she left the office, she actually skipped into the car.
I think Dr. Goldstein's favorite story was the day that I emailed him and told him that I was in the canned good aisles at the supermarket and I started to think about sex. That was when I knew, when I even actually started to think about sex, that the treatment was effective.
You know, this was such a shame because here was a patient who was actually willing to bring up the problem and a physician who was perhaps so focused on all the other things that we focus on when we're seeing a patient just after a baby. Is the nursing going well? Is the baby healthy? Is she bleeding too much? Is her uterus normal size? That it was dropped and then continually not addressed over many, many years.
It's true because many doctors avoid this topic for a variety of reasons. And time is one of those reasons, but also we really haven't been adequately trained to talk to patients about their sexual health. We also don't necessarily know how to make the diagnosis, what those criteria are. And we also don't necessarily have anything to offer women, or we feel like we don't, if they are diagnosed with a problem like HSDD. I think one of the other things is doctors are people too, and they are often concerned or embarrassed about what the patient is going to think if they bring up the topic.
It's also very important to the way this is brought up, as opposed to some special part of the history taking. This blends in. It's just another one of the questions that we ask, and clinicians have to become comfortable with that. Because if you're comfortable with it and, oh, you know, are you sexually active, blah, 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 the patient can respond in a more relaxed fashion because she feels, oh, this is just part of what we always talk about.
So once you've initiated the discussion, and it is the appropriate time to then delve deeper into it, what's involved in getting a really good and thorough sexual history? What do you need to uncover?
Well, again, to cover each category involved, we've got to look at the psychosocial to begin with, discussing relationship issues, discussing her sexual past, discussing any problems that she's had in her upbringing and what they used to discuss around the dinner table at her home, how strict was it. That's one area. Second area would be biological, hormonally. What's going on hormonally? How old is she? What phase is she? Is she in perimenopause? Is she postmenopausal? Is she on oral contraceptives? Going through all of this, looking in the medicine cabinet, what are you taking? What could potentially have an impact? All of these issues need to be covered. Also, is this something new? Has this happened before? Is this the first time? Were you ever able to have sexual desire? Is this a change?
Yeah, I think the change is really key because that helps you find out what to probe into. So if she had a normal sex life up until a certain time, in Lillian's case it was having a baby, then that allows us to focus, for example, in a postpartum patient on hormonal issues, on vaginal dryness. If she's nursing, the vagina may be very dry. It may be very painful. If she had a difficult delivery, that she may have a pain disorder going on that's influencing her desire for sexuality. She may be not sleeping. You know, I think there's a lot of sleep disorder in this country. And when women are exhausted, we're working outside the home, we're taking care, we're juggling all these things. When we're exhausted, sex isn't probably the most prominent thing in our minds when we get into bed. So the context is so important and the timing is really key.
I think it's really also important for us to let women know that this is a common time in which they may experience these kinds of problems. They're not alone. They're not the only ones. And that there's a wide spectrum of normal. And if we already know what is normal for this woman, then we can recognize that change. We can say, this is an uncommon time for this to happen. Let's look at this. And then bringing them back to see how things may have changed. It may just give her the opportunity to relax and give herself some time and be in the moment, and then things may get better.
And you brought up a point earlier, which was that differences in libido between partners can sometimes become distressful when they weren't earlier on in the relationship. And that's not necessarily a sexual disorder, but it's our job to be able to validate that and say not all people have the same level of sexual desire and be able to help a couple work through that.
We get questioned all the time. How many times a month when I had, you know, how many
or
times a month do you have sex or a day is normal? And it's totally different for everyone.
In preparing for this program, we heard from a number of physicians about time constraints that they believe prevent them from doing an in-depth interview on issues like sexuality. So are there time-saving methods that you might suggest?
I think Barbara had a very good idea. It's what I use frequently, and that is putting it off. In other words, bringing it up, Are you sexually active? Letting the patient begin to discuss it. And then if it's going to take up a large chunk and all the rest of the afternoon is going to be set behind by 45 minutes, saying to the patient, you know, this is clearly something that's important. And obviously you have concerns about it as well. Let's set a time aside that you can come back. And we can sit and just talk about this. No physical exam necessarily at that point, just to give us more time. Now, unfortunately, financially is also an important factor for clinicians. So this way, you set aside another visit, and you then have far more time to do it.
What's very important is up until a few years ago, all of the diagnosis codes that we could use were in the psychiatry section of the book, and were frequently uncovered services. So women had to pay out of pocket, or physicians never got paid. There is an ICD-9 diagnosis code now that's in a different section of the book, and it's listed under decreased libido. And it is covered as a medical condition so that physicians can get paid and patients don't have to pay out of pocket for that encounter. And that's a huge change and an improvement for our patients.
Well, I think that we do need to have questions in our mind that we think about to ask patients about. So we want to say, are you sexually active? Have you noticed a change in your desire, in arousal? Do you have any problems with lubrication? Do you have pain with sexual activity? Any problems with your orgasmic function? And how satisfied are you? Because satisfaction really has a lot to do with whether women talk about this and also what they want to do about it. And it plays into the whole distress issue.
Because when the answer to the question is no, I'm not sexually active, that doesn't stop the questioning. Because then the question is that okay with you that you're not sexually active? And then you may find out that there's a problem with a partner, or she doesn't have a partner, she's in the midst of a divorce, and you realize that she's actually much more depressed than you thought she was. So that one question can open up a lot of information for physicians about physical and psychological functioning that's really very helpful.
One thing, too, about that is physicians are often concerned about asking very young and very old people about that, as if they're not having sex. So, and if we don't talk about it, it won't happen. And also people who may have sexual orientation that differs from ours. So those are areas where we need to be thinking in advance. I need to ask specifically about this because I would tend to neglect it.